with the gang scenes and all of that, and I was born into it almost. Go and walk in a shop and empty a safe and hold them at gunpoint and stuff like that. At 16, 17, that was quite normal. You're not even allowed to be a Hells Angel member until you're 21 legally. Yeah, I had done a lot, yeah, to get that young, get it so young. He told me to shoot, I was going to shoot. Not proud of any of it today. I ain't that person anymore that wants to kill anybody. I ain't that person anymore that would do that to my community. Kia ora whānau, ko Neke Whenua Uriana Tōku Ingoa. I'm from Hastings, Napier, Hawke's Bay, New Zealand. Been home for 8 years now. Living in Omahu in this marae. Kaukurunui is the name of this marae. He is the son of Kaununu. Work-wise, is just helping the whānau in construction. Actually being here at the marae, like kaimahi, that being the ex-bikey or the ex-gangster I was, led me to being deported and back home and, seek this new life I live today, really.
How has the last 8 years been before?
A big learning curve, troubling at the start, very troubling at the start, but the last 3-4 years focusing on Te Ao Māori has been the healthiest part. Born here, born in Hawke's Bay Hospital. Went to Flaxmere College for like a year before I left to Aussie. But yeah, born here, primary school here at Flaxmere Primary, Flaxmere College, Iron Gate, and then went to Australia.
So how was your upbringing here, Hastings, brother?
It was good. Yeah, Dad always had a home. Owned a home, so Mum and Dad owned our last home here in New Zealand before we left, I remember. And all that sort of things, cupboards were full. Dad was always busy at mahi and all that. I suppose just what I was attracted to, or what was attractive then, was what led me astray from home, that home life, really. So it was good, bro. It was good while until the storm hit. Flaxmere Primary was the first school. It was good, bro. It was good. It was quite healthy. I was quite smart, too. So I was like, I got picked on for being smart, though, for being a nerd. But it was good, bro. It was good.
What was sort of your first experiences with, like, the street life and stuff like that?
First experience without family involved. Bro, we were sniffing glue one night, and I was with a couple of girls. And a couple of boys. These boys will remember this, and these girls will remember if they hear this, but we nearly got raped one night, and these two big blokes, we were young, we were all under 10, sniffing glue, doing what we were doing back then in the 90s, early 2000s. Yeah. That would have been the first experience away from home that I had to experience the streets by myself without an older brother or older cousin, or it was literally just young friends of mine. We had no one. We had no adults. We were children, and those two adults knew that we were six children out, at 12 o'clock in the morning. But that would have been the first experience, bro. And we got away. It never happened. We threw everything. We had bottles and everything. The girls ran first, and once we knew they were away, we ran away next. But that would have been the first, sort of street life. But obviously before that, we were quite comfortable roaming the streets, sniffing glue and stealing out of people's freezers and getting food and just being young buggers, really, smoking cigarettes in the park, thinking we're cool, but really we were only sitting there dormant, waiting to get scotched, by those type of males, But that would have been the first experience, bro, something heavy like that. With the gang scenes and all of that, I think, that was just from the get-go, really. Once I was able to know what a gang was, I sort of knew the behaviours of what a gang member was of. So that was always experienced. There was no first experience. I was born into it almost, you know what I mean? Not that my father brought me into it, but just his whakapapa, he was surrounded by it, so I was automatically born into it, really. If I stayed home, I was okay, but boys don't stay home. Very gang orientated, bro. And I think a lot of Flex, me and Hastings would vouch for this, but a lot of bloods. So many different blood gangs that I was watching, and I still remember family from different gangs were fighting each other simply because they had three different letters, you know. Or I was stuck in the middle of it. I was raised with some that were hated by most, if not all. You know, I was raised with Dark Side and Crime Squad bloods. I think, yeah, there was many others, but I got a lot of hidings just for being a sibling of that fraction of bloodsters, you know what I mean? But I got through it all and all of that. What else? Really gang infested back then. Like now it's so normal to me because I knew, I saw it then. All of those people we grew up, all of us then that grew up then, majority of them now are gang members. Yeah, and the best of them, really. Yeah, and they're still fighters. they're all still fighters. And I got picked on a lot, bro, because of that. Because my brother, I'll call him, he ended up going to Aussie with he was a Dark Side. So I kept getting picked on after he left to Aussie, bro. Just before I left Aussie, I kept getting picked on. I was visiting family as a bloodster. But these family were all Cripsters, and just the mihi. And that mihi got me a hiding just for mihiing my own blood. These are first cousins. These are my family from Tamatea, you know, and I just mihied them. I went back to school that day and got a hiding simply just for saying hello to my family. That was the first time. Yeah. The second time, I actually got stepped out for actually being with them in our own takiwā out Waimarama. And I just had enough, bro, and I was like, you know what? I grabbed the blue jacket and I chucked it on. I was like, come on. And now I went against the world, really, literally then, being a Flaxmerian, coming back, wearing blue and not giving a hoot, getting beaten up for it, you know what I mean? But knowing that I was standing tall just to that mihi, I gave some little love. Even the driver of that day of our school van was like, cool, that's so cool, you got out and mihi Cripsters in your Crip family. I was like, hey, they're just my family. Like, we're going through the hood, I'm just going to get out and say hello, you know. He thought it was cool, but, you know, every other young kid in their van thought it was stupid, but it wasn't stupid, it was your family. I started hitting ecstasy pills, like before I got to Aussie, so I was really quite familiar with stimulants, and started almost moving A-class drugs at that age too, before I left there, for the Crips, and for my older cousins. And it was a good time for me because I went from being beaten up and being the ugly duckling of Flaxmere to being somewhat well off in Tamatea as a Crip. Has a few factors. I know it was for a better life. Dad could make more money, which he did. We could get out of gangs. I know we could get away from the gang life anyway. And I could get away from taking those drugs. And I remember before we went to Oz, Dad had come time, we were going to Aussie. And then one of the family members was like, ask what your son's got in his bag. They already knew that I was drugs, and they were just fishing me to get it out. And then I pulled it out, and they swiped it out of my hands. You're going to Australia, boy. I was high as a kite, but the youngest in the room, all but 12, 13, higher than a kite, you know what I mean? Higher than any adult in the room. And I was the child. I was the child in some man boots that I shouldn't have put on, bro. But yeah, that's what got us to Aussie, I think, really. And I think most of all, Dad was a hard worker. So those 80 hours he was putting in here every week when he went to Australia and started putting 50 to 80 hours, yeah, he was able to buy a home within 8 years, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
So how was the move to Aussie, man? Where did you move to?
Good old Frankston, my bro. Good old Melbourne City, Burn City. Our home. Our home once upon a time where we had met my bro. Heaps different, bro. I just explained it the other day to someone that going from seeing stoners and drunkens fall asleep at the table to seeing heroin junkies with a needle in the arm dead on the street. Very two different I think, societies or lifestyles, you know what I mean? That, yeah, so that was hard seeing that. You know the community, like how it's fast, the fast lane? Yeah, that was a big difference, bro. The fast lane. And then adapting to it too fast than I should have. Which was all meant to happen because I'm back here, bro. But yeah, moved over to the southeast, Melbourne City, good old Australia. I loved it. I actually really enjoyed it, bro. If I think back on it now, I really enjoyed it. I learnt a lot there. Met a lot of friends. As soon as I got to school, bro, it was different, yeah. I went from the ugly duckling of Hawke's Bay to the prettiest Māori thing, apparently, in Frankston South, you know. So I was like a girlfriend every 2 months, cheating on that girlfriend every second month, like, you know what I mean? But that's what young bucks were doing then. But going from having that lifestyle of not being fortunate, or not fortunate enough to have such caliber of humans that wanted to be attracted to you when you came from New Zealand, it was literally just those few gangsters or family or schoolmates you hung out with. So, but when I got to Australia, it was like automatically, like, I had 100 people that wanted my attention. So I was like, a few. So it was nice going from being bullied to seeing bully happening, then I could stop it. You know what I mean? So I could see all this happening because I was seeing me getting bullied and I was chopping it. And some of these fellas I stopped from getting bullied are now Golden Glove kickboxers, MMA fighters. They all saw the benefits of being strong and went and got themselves strong, and now they're protecting the community themselves. Yeah, the Crip world over there, we try to manifest, or we did get going, was quite attractive. It was quite attractive and, quite brawling at times, and a lot of paint used on walls pretty much, but nothing too violent. But it was if you painted on the wrong wall, but it was, you knew where you were stepping if you're doing such things. So it was like, don't be a toy to do that. Just go keep on your own lane type buzz. But yeah, the gang life over there. Before the actual club life, it was more so the spray painting scene, bro. Just TLR, trust, loyalty and respect. That was another wild bunch. PFK, Play for Keeps, or Paul Frankston kids. They were another wild bunch. And just fighting with everybody else that was from out of Frankston, really, yeah. Yeah, just the graph crew, really. I think you could knuckle it down to that. But the Crip thing sort of wasn't going nowhere because there was no opposition. You know, we were nearly fighting other Crips just to be the better Crip, you know. It's like, oh, no, that's going nowhere. But I think a lot of us turned to graph. Like, we knew we were deep down, we were, you know, but obviously we were just adapting ourselves to a new society, which we all eventuated from New Zealand, but, you know, started adapting to an Aussie way of going. So it ended up being graph crews and with a spice of Aotearoa New Zealand in it. You know, sometimes we still wear rags, you know, instead of wearing a shirt over our face, we'd just put a red bandana or a blue bandana, you know what I mean? Like, and we'd feel home a little bit while we were being mischief, you know, or we'd try, you know. But yeah, that would have been the bit of experience, bro, before going to prison in that world. Mm.
Yeah, so how was it, you know, after leaving school and sort of, what did you do after that?
Partied. Partied rottingly. No. Just partied, bro, partied, got messy, lost the baby, done heaps. Yeah, just getting into crime, bro, got like real deep into crime. Because being an addict, because I was an addict, obviously trying to pay for that habit, I was adapting to crimes that my friends weren't even willing to do, you know what I mean? But I was able to just elevate myself to be able to go and walk in a shop and empty a safe and hold them at gunpoint and stuff like that. At 16, 17, that was quite normal for me. I was able to do that with a breeze, 10 times over. So much so I got, 6 years at 18. So by the time I was 18, I was already, 10 armed robberies deep, 10 firearms deep, 10 bags deep, 10 days no sleep.
So, then, sort of, when did the club life, how did that sort of begin?
That was after all the sentencing, after jail, after all that, all those first offences that got me to jail. Cleaning myself up. I think some of the our friends that we know, they knew the charges, and they saw the charges were a bit off for a 17-year-old. So they sort of pulled me in straight away and realised most other 17-year-olds were coming in for one charge, a stabbing, Agberg. I was coming in for like, you know, five of each, different ones. And being young juvenile, I was able to get the rights of a juvenile, but in an adult prison, so they couldn't make me serve more than three off the bat. Unless it was murder or something like that, they could make me serve a bit more. So I was fortunate to get all of that. Just, I think, tidying myself up and not being that fidgety, brassy that I came in, being like, they saw that I was still a good bit of a go-getter. I was able to do things. I say yes, you know, I don't want to explain what we could have done, you know, but when you're in those times of being tested, you would do anything, So I was capable of doing anything for them or wanting to, but not for them, it was for a mate, you know what I mean? And that mate saw it, he invited me, so on and so forth, but just being with that mate and accepting his skill set and him teaching me that I needed to work when I get out, I needed these things to be able to be a Hell's Angel. None of these things I never ever had. Yeah, just was able to say yes, bro. I was just a yes man, really. And that wasn't even just to get in the club. I wasn't even prospecting then. I was considered a hanger. I was considered a supporter in the prison system because I was always hanging out with them. And everybody knew I was destined for me to head that way because they knew I was going to be a Hell's Angel because I was hanging out with that particular person. Yeah, good. I got it out. I firstly went to the detention centre after that first 3 years, won that case, and ran straight to Maui Burn. I got out that first case and it was all handed to me. What I needed then to be able to progress, maybe to live somewhat a normal life then. I had the lady, she had a son. That's the love of my life. She still is, you know what I mean? Raised me a beautiful son with her. If I had just taken what I was blessed with then and moved on from life, we would have still been there, possibly doing it a righteous way. But then I think I wouldn't be home for what I'm doing now. I got out, bro, won the case. She was in love with me. I was in love with her. We had baby within 12 months, second baby within, and I was already back in prison. Had her pregnant, bro. She was trying to raise her son, our son, whilst pregnant with our son, whilst I'm in prison, while she's living with a family that's new to her, all my family, and which she was happy to.
You were the youngest in the world at the time.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. Yeah, 20. You're not even allowed to be a Hell's Angel member until you're 21 legally, but what I was doing at 20, not anybody above 20 was doing it. So I done that silly shit at 20 and I was able to progress myself to be somewhat, not even respected just in amongst Hell's Angels, but in amongst Melbourne City in general, you know. Like, I could have bounced anywhere. It could have been anywhere I could have went just with the love I had for a couple of bros. But I was able to listen and do, really, and without hesitation. Yeah, I had done a lot, yeah. To get it so young. Being that young bugger, I was still learning though. I wasn't trying to take any president off their stool, any sarge. I was able to behave just like them, but I was literally there just for the bro, Maui. You know, Mahama Kota, our dear friend Maui. And I was just able to be a good friend, you know what I mean? You told me to jump, I would jump, you know. You told me to shoot, I was gonna shoot. You tell me to take son to school the next day, we'll shoot that person, take son to school the next day and then cook you and your wife dinner that night, you know what I mean? I was able to bounce and put on different hats in the gang world and able to adapt myself, not only to those gang members, but I was quite open to all their families. I was able to know their wives, their kids, you know, and be the clown of the class once the kids were around, you know, so I was able to adapt like that. And
in a nutshell, what the hell was the club like for you?
She was ruthless, bro. She was all the demons you could think of. She was all the sins you could think of. Not proud of any of it today at all. However, it's made me become more aware of society today and what's needed for myself, my people, I know my kids anyway, and what I don't want for them. Like the likes of earning your keep. You got to go to work. You can't cheat like I did to become that person, stuff like that. I got stabbed up for the first time in a gang incident. You know, it wasn't a gun or anything, so it was close combat. That was interesting. I nearly could have lost my life if I didn't curl up in one way and sort of scream and huddle the other way so they couldn't stab me in my organs. But it was like I moved enough to be able to get them not stabbing me in the right places. Yeah, bro, yeah. Got back to prison after that parole. Baby mum was pregnant again with my daughter, Zyla Lee. I had a bit of pull then as well because I had become that young member. I got stabbed, become that young member, 20 years young, got all the notoriety, all the blessings. So I had a bit of pull. I wasn't ready. I already signed the papers, but I knew I wasn't ready. It was hard, bro. Getting to deporting, bro, when I got deported, it just came straight back into gang life, really. I should have took those opportunities of knowing I had a clean slate. Put my baby mama and kids through hell again, really. I wish it all never happened, but I hope she knows. I know she knows, actually, that I'm meant to be home where I am today. I'm meant to be doing all of this. We was meant to be here when our mothers died. You know, we was meant to be strong together when our mothers passed. The passing of our mothers, bro, had a lot to do with it. More so, before that, bro, I lost my kids. I was high on drugs and, you know, being fresh from deportation, still trying to do it all. It was hard to live in general here, bro. I wanted family to come know me for me. I ain't that person anymore that wants to give you that kilo of drugs. I ain't that person anymore that wants to kill anybody. I ain't that person anymore that would do that to my community. All I got now is my tipuna, my marae, you know, my own hard work. Everything I do is all hard work, you know. But you were, sorry, bro. Yeah, that was hard, bro. Like, noticing that people only wanted to know me for that part, you know. They didn't care about the struggles I was going through or, you know, the momoi I had. Oh, heaps better now, bro. Going from then to now, when my old lady did pass, it was another test. Because I just started, I know, getting in the work life and all of that and getting clean. I had just gotten clean, bro. I'd gone to Auckland. I'd gone to Auckland to get away and get clean. It was about 4 months clean, bro, and the old lady passed away. And I was down here. And it's that moment then, I think a lot of family thought I was going to break. I should have broken. The old me should have broken. I couldn't break, bro, because I had just gotten my kids back in my care. And I just gotten her back, and I just got him back in her house. So I was just allowed back in the house. So I was grateful for that. So I knew if I had turned or broke or showed her any signs of breaking, I was possibly going to make her anxious again, or, you know, unsafe or insecure with how I may feel or get. I might go and get a drug and try and block those feelings out. But yeah, she was hard, bro. But also bring a whole lot of ideas, bro. Like, as soon as mum passed, I started thinking of eating good food, bro, you know what I mean? Like, I'm drinking water and trying to have less sugar just because of what's happened to her, stuff like that, you know what I mean? So it's just trying to find the blessings from it all, really. And the blessings are really what not to do. You know, she really gave me the blessing on what not to do and told me what I could do, which was be here and live here and get with our whānau and learn the whakapapa, which she didn't know, you know. Nor does my older brother. So it sort of rested with me, you know, and I'm happy too. I think I've moved on so much so from her, I'm quite happy where I'm at now, knowing I am where she wants me to be. You know, just even with my whakaaro, my mahi, even just my free time, where she knows I should be spending it, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it was hard, bro. Adapting to everything normal would have been the most challenging. Relying on social services instead of an OG for gain, for just normal day-to-day experience, normal life experience, how to deal with things or certain things. I felt hard though, quite depressing, because I know I'd lost the kids and all of that and all of that jazz and mum and that. But it was the concreting wheel, bro, that I think it was just, stepping into wanting to be a tradesman sort of pulled me out of it being somewhat tough, and knowing that I had to not live beyond my means anymore and come back down to earth and living within reality. So it was I was really smart enough to understand that I was living beyond my means, hence why I was in so much trouble. I'm back and within my means now, you know. I'm not chasing the devil's pitchfork as much anymore, or at all, you know. In that aspect of life, trying to chase the glam and glitters and be somewhat bad and bougie, you know what I mean? Like, I got asked just the other day, would I ever go back to that lifestyle to be bad and bougie, to be well off? And I told her I wouldn't do it for you. I wouldn't do it for Beyonce, Rihanna, Cardi B, not another. I was like, and she looked at me and she was like, really? I was like, no. I'm living within reality and staying in that lane where I'm broke. Like, you know, where I'm living week to week, not broke, but happy. You know, I'm able to have gas to get to a wānanga. I'm able to take koro down to the shop, you know, stuff like that. So I don't need much anymore, like a bikey did or like an Aussie did, you know. I didn't need a 5-course meal every second day at a restaurant, and I don't need to spend $1,000 or $2,000 on clothes you're only going to wear twice a year, you know what I mean? In New Zealand, you shouldn't ever wear ever, you know what I mean? Like, I think if they just come back to the lane of Aotearoa, they'll realise that that lifestyle's not for us, and it can be quite detrimental to their own futures or, you know, their own wants and needs. This mahi comes from Rarohinga, from a rangatira named Uitonga. And his daughter was Newarika. And Newarika, she's like, you know, the underworld ancestress. She's like a queen. She's a goddess. He beat her up, black and blue, and all of that. But he used to have his painted on, and he was from this side of, you know. He was from a whole other world. He wasn't from the underworld. And you're not allowed to touch women, or you shouldn't treat the woman the way he treated her. But he beat her up and made her black and blue. She ran back to Uitonga, to her dad. And he had his matawara painted on, bro, and he went through all these trials and tribulations to find her. Story in a nutshell, he got to where Newarika was. He realised her father had a real matawara, and he was doing the mahi, and they were carving it in to another tangata, another person. And he had seen it and requested for it, and Uitonga had told him, Kyle, like, you just left my daughter black and blue, and to have this, you know, you must be somewhat responsible for your actions in the past and further yourself forward, you know what I mean? You must show us that you are forever guilty of your stupid actions. And maybe, just maybe, you might receive the real matawara. I think in doing all of that, they sort of bummed him out because they wiped it and laughed at him because he had it painted on. You know, so he was destined, after he went through that shame of realising he wasn't manly enough, to not only get Newarika back but to uphold her tikanga of her father. Yeah. He had to go through all these trials, and I think one of them I gathered from them that I live by today is having that pōuri, that state of understanding or that guilty conscience of your past to further you forward, you know? Not to use it against anybody or anything, but to know that you can right a wrong, you know what I mean? And that's what I learned from Mataora, is he writ some wrongs, you know, in order for him to receive his Mataora. And like, it's not just one wrong, like I try and, you know, I'll write other people's wrongs if I could, you know what I mean, or try and redirect them. But Mataora, yeah. So when I got this for Mum, I also got it for my baby mama. Just for every woman in general, I don't ever want to put another woman or my baby mama through what I had put her through, like Niwereke had went through, you know what I mean? And then I also want to live by it, you know, and work on it, and maybe stop others from ever making wahine go through that. Not just know that everything gets a lot easier once you get off the fence and come this way. It becomes more real, honest. The love is real. If you are sitting on the fence, you could quite possibly take your family away from being with the devil, which they shouldn't be anywhere near. Everybody says that, you know. Somewhere in here, they have a big part to play in a patch member's life. Why the fuck should they have a big part to play? You know, they got no part to play when it's war. You know, they got no part to play when it's money. You know, but you expect them to have a part to play when you're going through the rough and all of that. So I believe... if you are sitting on the fence, I can't tell the ones that are still doing it and to stop doing it because of their baby mamas and kids and all of that. But when they're ready to get onto the fence, you know what I mean? I maybe could tell them then that, like, it's not shameful. It's not, it's manly to change. It's not weak. You know what I mean? I've been called weak. I've been called a pussy. I've been called all the words under the sun. Each and every one of them that are saying that, that are having the most hardest time, you know what I mean, in their lives, and do I be an egg about it and message them and say, hey, you look like an egg now, you know what I mean, or I can just sit here and know that I'm okay, you know. Maybe our kids need to see blood, sweat and tears and those are the likes of Jesus again to see what it means, what hard work really means, you know, because it's easier when you're funded by the masses or the devil's pitchfork. Maybe to those kids, all those young ones who are, you know, thinking of not doing it or, you know, raised around it and still ain't doing it. Your dad needs you more than your bro does. Your papa, your granddad needs you more than your bro does. A lot of young ones, my age, they're still blaming the system for their behaviour instead of blaming themselves. You can't be 30 and going blaming the system. I've been fortunate enough for this last week, bro, to be around like-minded men for our own reasons. You know, other than the marae, we walked away from this marae and you were able to place me in a place where I was able to feel comfortable with the right people, you know, with like-minded men. I have never done that, bro. And I've been telling everybody I went for a carver session and I went and they found some friends I can do it with. And so pretty much just having you home, bro, I've been able to feel a little bit more home just having you home, bro. So thank you for coming, coming here, bro, and seeing my home. I thank you very much, my bro, and it's been a pleasure. It's been a real pleasure, bro, having you here, and now you know that I'm where I am, bro, and thank you, my bro.